That's really interesting because it seems like attempts to find a tissue or other assay to predict sensitivity, particularly to checkpoint inhibitors, kind of doesn't seem to be going too far beyond PD-1 and TMB, and even those aren't all that tremendously exciting. Anything you've heard about, Andy, in terms of prediction of benefit to checkpoint inhibitors that's new?
Yeah, well, I think we're better at predicting lack of response to immunotherapies than we are at predicting response to immunotherapies. And I think back to things in the lung cancer world, especially where you've got STK11 and KRAS co-occurring mutations, and then also this new gene KEAP1 that keeps coming up, and those are associated with lack of benefit. I think that the tumor microenvironment is going to be the key where we really discover pockets of patients who have a distinct tumor microenvironment that are primed to respond to immunotherapies. And I don't think we've done all the work there yet. It's something that's on the horizon.
So here's a very simple question, and probably I'm just not smart enough to understand the obvious answer, but you have a patient with a known BRCA germline mutation, strong family history, pretty classic situation, and the patient gets lung cancer. Do they respond to a PARP inhibitor?
Well, you need to have a piece of the lung tissue and look for the mutation in there.
Well, if it's germline, it's going to be in there, right?
No. It could be a sporadic lung cancer that occurred in a germline BRCA2 positive patient.
Well, the mutation will be there, it just won't be biallelic.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, the fact that
you won't have loss, you won't have LOH, you won't have loss of the other.
So, Neil, this brings up an important point. Not every cancer in a patient with a germline DNA repair mutation is due to an alteration in the second copy of that gene. So you can still get sporadic cancers, even in Lynch syndrome. For example, I have seen patients with prostate cancer that have germline MSH2 or 6 mutations, and their prostate tumor has the germline mutation, but does not have a second hit in that same gene in the prostate cancer.
How do you tell that?
You look for that second allele.
When what? Like an NGS?
Yeah.
You look for the second allele.
Right. So do you remember Knudsen's two-hit hypothesis? So Alfred Knudsen. Knudsen hypothesized, which is it seems like it's bearing out, you need two hits. The first hit, typically in setting of cancer, occurs in the germline DNA. But then a cancer does not develop until a somatic cell, let's say a colon cell, develops a second hit in that same gene. And then that second gene inactivates the function of, let's say, the mismatch repair protein, and then that person gets a colorectal cancer. If you don't find that second hit in the tumor, the somatic hit, you cannot assume that that cancer was related to the germline predisposition.
So what exactly would the NGS assay say?
So let's say you have a frame shift mutation in MSH2. The NGS assay would have a second mutation somewhere else, or it would have a deletion of the other allele. It would say loss of heterozygosity.
Do you think the average general medical oncologist would see that on a report?
They would see it. On one of the cases that we reviewed earlier, I think there's there was an example
the
of the ATM.
Yeah.
It had an ATM mutation, comma, another ATM mutation, comma, and then the splice site variant. So they listed them one right after the other on the Foundation Medicine report. But you're bringing up the exact right question, and that's most people see the report and see the gene name, and that's enough. And I think what we're kind of talking about is diving deeper into what the specific mutations are in that gene, and even deeper, what are the allelic fractions of those mutations, are all the minutiae involved in here that are all very clinically important and very difficult for a general medical oncologist to get just from one of these reports.